Vítaj, nech to vyhýva vyššie.各位观众朋友们，大家好，欢迎收看《美国观察》，我是鲍荣。首先来关注今天的重要新闻。乌克兰星期四在布鲁塞尔举行的欧盟峰会上被正式接纳为加入欧盟的候选国。此举不仅对乌克兰居民具有相当大的鼓舞士气的作用，而且对俄罗斯入侵乌克兰之后欧洲政治版图的改变也极具象征意义。俄罗斯长期以来一直反对乌克兰与欧盟或者是北约建立密切的关系，但是俄军入侵乌克兰正好把基辅推进了欧盟的怀抱。乌克兰总统泽连斯基在星期四的一段视频讲话中再次呼吁西方盟友加速向乌克兰提供重武器，以便在战场上抵御和化解俄军火力上的巨大优势。美国最高法院星期四裁决纽约一个限制枪支的法律违反宪法。大法官们以6-3做出的这项裁决，预计让纽约、洛杉矶和波士顿等美国大城市还有其他地区有更多的人能够合法带枪上街。这是最高法院十多年来首次有关枪支案件的裁决。该裁决认为纽约一个要求民众展示携带枪支的特别需求才能够获得公开携枪执照的法律违反宪法。大法官克拉伦斯·托马斯在多数裁决意见中写道，宪法保护一个人在家外携带手枪自卫的权利。纽约法律的支持者表示说，裁定法律违宪会最终导致街头出现更多的枪支和更高的暴力犯罪。目前在德克萨斯州、纽约州还有加利福尼亚州最近发生大规模枪击事件后，国会正在积极努力制定枪支法律。美国总统拜登与第一夫人吉尔·拜登23日在白宫接见受伤的军人、护理人员以及他们的家人。拜登总统称赞这些军人是美国的脊梁，这是年度军人骑行活动的一部分。退伍陆军下士格林在伊拉克服役时受伤，他说退伍军人的相互关怀还有照顾使他重新振作起来。
16 months after enlisting, I found myself on the rooftop of a police station in Baghdad, Iraq, watching. Two rocket-propelled grenades almost hit the Humvees below. As I prepared to return fire, a rocket hit me and separated my left arm from my body.I thought I was going to die, but as I lay there, I decided to say a prayer. I said, please give me the strength to tell my story, and I want a child. And today, my son Daniel is 7 years old.
You're the best America has to offer. That's not hyperbole. You're the best America has to offer. You embody the soul and the spirit of the nation.As I like to say, you're the very spine of America. You're the spine of this country. You're who makes us what we are. The writers here today, and your families and caregivers, we can never thank you enough. And that sounds like a trite statement, but it's literal. We can never thank you enough.
拜登总统将于本周六启程前往德国与西班牙参加 G7 与北约峰会。国安会的资深官员表示说，俄罗斯对乌克兰的侵略非但没有让美国忽视中国的挑战，反而更加深了亚洲和欧洲民主国家的联系，在本次峰会当中将出台针对俄罗斯与中国的新战略。此外，乌克兰总统泽连斯基也将在两场峰会上致辞。详细情况我们请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅为我们介绍。耀毅，
这拜登总统预计呢，在本周六，也就是6月25号，来出访欧洲，直到30号，也就是星期四。那么他先会前往德国呢，进行访问，参加 G7 的峰会。那么还在当地呢，也会跟德国的总理肖尔茨举办双边会议。之后呢，前往西班牙参加北约的峰会。而乌克兰总统泽伦斯基呢，则是预计会在两个峰会上都分别致辞。白宫的国安会呢，在星期三的晚上举办了背景简报会，来介绍了拜登总统此行的一些 概况还有主要的目的。那国安会的资深官员介绍说呢，本次的 G7 的峰会上呢，除了 G7 成员国之外，也有一些的其他的国家受邀来出席，包括阿根廷、印度、印度尼西亚、塞内加尔、南非，还有各大国际组织的领导人。而美国在本届 G7 的峰会的目标呢，有四大目标。第一个呢，是要来推出一系列针对俄罗斯施压的坚定措施；第二是要处理普京对于乌克兰战争造成的全球以及美国国内油价上涨、能源安全还有粮食安全的问题；第三呢，则是要共同推进全球自由与开放、反胁迫、侵略与划分势力范围，也要增强在经济议题、网络空间还有量子计算以及中国挑战方面的合作；第四则是要基于世界自由与开放的愿景，启动全球基础建设伙伴关系，来提升中低收入的国家，也同时要增进美国的竞争力还有国家安全。白宫国安会的战略沟通协调官约翰科比呢，在星期四的白宫新闻简报会上就强调说呢，这个全球基础伙伴关系呢，将可以来协助世界其他的国家免受到这个所谓叫债务陷阱这样子的经济困境。那美国之音就询问这个科比说呢，这个全球基础建设伙伴关系是否就是要来对抗中国的所谓的一带一路？尤其他特别也提到了一带一路经常被这个批评的所谓的债务陷阱这样子的事情。那么对此呢，科比则是做出了回应。我们看一下白宫国安会的战略协调官科比怎么回应。
On the global infrastructure partnership, I think you know this was something that the president unveiled at the G7 summit last year. And so this year, what you're going to see is him and his G7 partners really actualizing this. I don't want to get ahead here of announcements, but you'll see the G7 really putting some energy and some resources behind this going forward. And it is about, as I put in my opening statement, it is about alternatives to other models out there that are highly transactional and actually work to the disadvantage of lower and middle income countries. We think there's better ways of doing business, there's better ways of fostering economic development and infrastructure than some of the models out there. And we believe that this is one of them, and we're excited to get it started.
而在北约峰会方面呢，这个白宫国安会的战略沟通协调官科比表示，除了这个欧洲的这些国家来参加北约峰会之外呢，印太地区的国家也受邀前往，包括澳大利亚、日本、新西兰以及韩国都受邀出席。那么这也是拜登总统要来团结亚洲以及欧洲的盟友，一起来捍卫原则还有主权与领土的完整。那么呢，大家也会来一起对乌克兰实施最大的这个援助，让乌克兰能够以最坚强的立场来上谈判桌，与俄罗斯进行谈判。而除了在这个北约峰会上呢，除了谈论俄罗斯之外呢，也将会来关注中国的威胁。那白宫的国安会资深官员在这个背景简报会上就特别提到了，说呢，美国在本届北约峰会的这个目标之一呢，第一个是要来宣布新的北约战略概念。那他说呢，当然俄罗斯是对北约目前最严重也最立即的威胁，但是这一份新的战略概念呢，也将引领长期的战略，来因应中华人民共和国对于欧洲还有这个跨大西洋安全所构成之威胁。那么他也提到呢，说乌克兰的战争并没有造成美国来忽视中国，反而是相反，更加坚定了在欧洲以及亚洲的民主世界。那么这一份的这个战略呢，将会包括中俄两国。那拜登总统呢，也将会把这个中国的方面呢特别提出来，那也将来宣布一个新的增强北约防御以及吓阻的措施。那么最后呢，一个目标是要来确保北约有足够的资源。那么他说呢，过去的盟友在过去七年当中是持续的加大投入资源，那么现在很多的欧洲国家至少投入2%的 GDP 给北约。那么此外呢，这个白宫国安会的资深官员也表示呢，美国当然是支持芬兰以及瑞典加入北约的申请。那另外资深官员也说呢，去年的 G7 就是一个分水岭，首次清楚点明了中国不公平 性而且胁迫性的这个经济行为。那预计呢，这还会继续在这次的峰会当中扩大讨论。那清楚认知中国这样子的做法呢，是越来越有侵略性，而且对世界都造成更大的影响，而且全世界呢都有经验中国这样子的做法。那么在今天的这个白宫新闻简报会上呢，我也询问了这个国安会的战略沟通协调官科比说，说美国认为现在拜登总统已经成功的团结了各国的盟友，但是我们同时也看到了，就在昨天，这个中国才在举办了这个金砖四国的经济的这个论坛。那么在上面呢，中国国家主席习近平也发表讲话，针对美国，那也看到了美国所谓的盟友，包括像巴西、印度等等，都与习近平还有普京一起坐下来谈。那么对此呢，科比只回应是说呢，美国也跟这些国家都有接触，那么并不阻止其他的国家与中国与俄罗斯接触。那么说金砖四国的会议也不是第一次举办了，美国有信心美国与自己的盟友们能够提供更好的方案。鲍荣。
好的，非常感谢美国之音记者黄耀毅在白宫的报道。中国政府和军方最近抛出台湾海峡不属于国际水域的论调，并通过官媒不断炒作。北京在台海地位的立场变化引发了美国国会两党的警惕和担忧。议员们再次强调台湾海峡为国际水域，并将捍卫台海航行自由，同时呼吁北京不要从乌克兰战争中汲取错误的教训。有关详情，下面我们连线美国之音记者李怡华为我们介绍。怡华。
好的，鲍荣。那么来自阿肯色州的共和党联邦参议员科顿呢，星期三在华盛顿智库詹姆斯敦基金会的一场演讲当中，就谈到了您刚刚所提出来的有关于这个台海安全局势的担忧。那么科顿参议员呢，他是参议院军事委员会的成员，一直以来呢可以说是相当的关注中国在印太地区的发展和行动。那么在演讲当中呢，科顿参议员呢是表示说，近来有越来越多的迹象显示中国可能将加快这个步伐来采取行动，以武力来入侵台湾。那么他也对此表示相当的这个担心哦。那么科顿参议员呢，他是表示说，这个他举的例子当中就提到了这个中国政府最近宣称台湾海峡呢是中国的内海这样的说法。那么作为回应，科顿参议员他表示，美国政府应该要以更加明确的态度，应该要改变美国对台湾长期以来所奉行的战略模糊政策，该以更加清晰立场的态度来威慑北京的可能这个对台湾进行武力行动的这个企图。那么事实上呢，这个对台湾改变对台湾的战略模糊政策这样的这个主张和说法，在国会两党当中呢，可以说是凝聚了越来越高的共识。那么同样是参议院军事委员会的成员，不过是民主党人，来自伊利诺伊州的民主党联邦参议员达克沃斯，在不久之前呢，曾经访问过台湾。那么他在接受美国之音采访的时候，他也强调了这个美国呢，他是支持美国改变对台的战略模糊政策，改加以更加清晰的立场来捍卫台湾。除此之外，他也强调，这个美国方面呢是不会承认中国的这个声称，也就是美国认为呢，台湾海峡依旧是这个国际水域，他不会承认这个中国所提出来的这个台湾海峡是内海这样的说法。那么接下来我们就来听听这个达克沃斯参议员在接受美国之音采访时是怎么说的。
I think we need to pay attention to what China thinks are the lessons learned from Russia's war in Ukraine.I don't know that they can push up their timeline, but I will tell you that we're committed to maintaining freedom of navigation on the Straits of Taiwan, and so know that we will push back on those claims. Those are not internal waters to the PRC. Those are very important international waters that America is committed to maintaining free navigation on.
那么在台海问题上面呢，这个共和党人呢也有许多的声音是表示这个相当批评这个拜登政府对中国的立场是不够强硬。那么除了刚刚所提到的科顿参议员有这样的主认为之外呢，来自佛罗里达州的共和党联邦参议员斯科特也同样的批评拜登政府在应对中国的这个立场和问题上面的态度不够强硬。那么除此之外呢，斯科特参议员在接受我们采访的时候也强调了，他呼吁呢台湾呢在这个接下来的时间应该要积极的发展自身的防卫能力应对中国的威胁，与此同时也必须要这个积极的建立和盟友的关系，以应对北京的这种威胁以及这个北京想要在国际社会上孤立台湾的这种努力。那我们继续来听听斯科特参议员怎么说。
I think what they've watched is under Biden, you know, Biden's weak, and so I think they're going to continue to push because, you know, Biden doesn't stand up against dictators ever. So I think that's an issue we're going to deal with for the next 2.5 years. So I think it's going to be incumbent upon Taiwan to really put a lot of effort into, one, building up their own defenses, and two, making sure they have a lot of relationships, including ours. We always hope not, but I do believe that if you want to control your destiny, and that means Taiwan needs to really put a lot of effort into building their own security and building relationships.
那么过去几个月来呢，这个国会两党呢是出台了许多有关于这个提升台湾防卫能力、协助提升台湾防卫能力的法案，其中就包括了上个星期由这个参议院的两党重要的这个议员所提出来的一项法案，称之为台湾政策法。那么这项法案是由这个参议院的外交关系委员会主席梅嫩德斯参议员以及资深的共和党议员格雷厄姆所共同提出的法案当中呢，将会这个支持台湾为台湾提供这个45亿美元的这个军事援助，以及同时将台湾计划将台湾列为美国的非北约重要盟友。不过法案在提出之后呢，目前还没有任何新的进展。有关详情呢，也会美国之音会为观众朋友来掌握。以上呢就是记者在国会方面所掌握到的情况。时间交还给主持人鲍荣。
好的，非常感谢美国之音记者李怡华在国会的报道。华裔女生李丹婷最近发表的处女作《窃贼的肖像》被多家媒体评选为2022年最受期待的小说。李丹婷最近接受了美国之音的专访，谈到她如何通过讲述艺术品盗贼的故事来探索华裔美国人的身份的复杂性，以及从身份挣扎到身份认同的过程。
Thank you very much, Grace, for speaking with me today. First of all, congratulations on publishing your debut, Portrait of a Thief.You're telling a very interesting story here about five young Chinese Americans who were recruited by a Chinese benefactor to steal back some Chinese arts that were looted from Beijing centuries ago. How did you come up with this story idea?
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so excited for our conversation. This book is actually inspired by a true story. And so several years ago, I learned about how Chinese art was getting stolen from these museums around the world, and no one knew who was behind it, but all the pieces of art that was getting stolen had originally been looted from China before. And so I was immediately fascinated by this story.
It's very interesting that you were inspired by true stories, but in those real life heists,The thieves have not been identified yet, as you just said. So why did you make your characters Chinese Americans?
I think for me, I started writing this book when I had recently graduated college, and I wanted to write a story that, you know, was about people like me and my friends. Growing up, I didn't read many books that, you know, featured Chinese Americans, and it wasn't until college that I reallylearned that stories could be by us and about us, and I wanted to write something like that.
Sure. It's also a good way to examine the complexity of Chinese-American identity, right? I think you've done a pretty good job in showcasing, you know, various types of Chinese-Americans. The five main characters, each has their own, you know, relationship with China, their own cultural background, and their, you know, family issues. I think it shows that Chinese-Americans are not a monolith. Was that your intention when developing your characters?
Yes, definitely. That was something that was very purposeful on my end, just because I think that there's such a diversity of experiences within the Chinese American experience, and so I wanted to capture a part of that within my book and really make sure that these five characters had different backgrounds and different reasons for embarking upon this journey.
But all your characters actually went to top schools, Harvard, Stanford, Duke, and MIT, right?Like your own family. So have you thought about breaking some sort of model minority stereotype?
Yeah, so in putting that together, part of it is just, you know, some of it was based on, you know, my own experiences growing up, but also I wanted to talk about the pressures that a lot of Chinese Americans feel and this idea that once you make it to a top school, you know, that is success or that's, you know, all that you need. because a lot of the characters, even though they are, you know, finishing up college or they're in a job, they still don't feel, you know, completely satisfied with their life. And so I wanted to, you know, untangle this idea of, you know, achievement and ambition versus what self-fulfillment and happiness is.
Speaking of the pressure, I noticed that all the five main characters, they also have some sort of identity struggle for being Chinese Americans. Oftentimes they feel like they don't belong anywhere. How does this struggle, identity struggle, play into their decision to get on board with these art heists?
Yeah, I love this question because I think that the heist can really be thought of this extended metaphor. We have this art that has been looted from China and these Chinese Americans who get to bring back this art. And so it was very meaningful to me to have these characters who are trying to figure out what home means, to take this art and to return it to China.
Somehow it reminds me a survey I just read, which shows that Americans are more likely to question the loyalty of Asian Americans. I remember one-third of respondents think that Asian Americans are more loyal to their perceived country or region than to the United States. Of course, this kind of perception is very much problematic. But in your book, they are five, you know, Chinese Americans who were recruited by a Chinese benefactor. They are stealing arts from American museums to get them back to China. Are you afraid that it can be interpreted into a case of Chinese Americans lacking loyalty to the United States?
I've never so much thought of it that way because, I guess, to me, I was born in the U.S. I was raised here. I consider myself, you know, fully American. And I think it's a very American, you know, mentality to think that, you know, this art doesn't belong in the museums that it's at currently, and so it ought to be returned. I don't think it's specific to questions of loyalty to which country, but just overall what is ethical in terms of us as people and us as, you know, citizens of the world.
So I think it's more like a reflection on colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
Also some like ethical issues involved, right? For example, is it legitimate to commit a crime in order to correct the mistakes or injustice happened in the past? Have you given a thought on this?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, in the real world, what I hope is that museums, you know, have these conversations and make the decisions on their own. But of course, that wouldn't be as interesting of a story. And so in the book, these characters commit these crimes. And I think that's an ongoing question that I hope readers of the book will also grapple with.
Let's talk more about identity struggle we were talking about before. In the survey I was referring to, it shows that Asian Americans are among the least likely to feel like they belong and are accepted in the United States. Is that something you can relate to from your personal experience?
Yeah, I think like many, you know, Asian Americans growing up here, when I was growing up, I would often get questions about where I was really from, or I would get compliments on my English, and I would constantly feel like, even though I considered myself fully American, many other people didn't see me that way. And, you know, at the same time, I would go visit my family in China, and they would ask me well-meaning questions about whether I could speak Chinese or whether I could use chopsticks. And so with those two put together, I would feel sometimes like I didn't have a place in either China or America. And so that struggle was something that I thought about a lot growing up, and I put into my book because I wanted the characters to go through that same journey and also, you know, make it to the end with self-acceptance.
Have you talked about this with your parents? Are they feeling the same? Because they are the first generation of immigrants, so their feeling might be different from yours. Is that it?
Yeah, I have had these conversations with my parents, and especially so, I think, in recent years with the conversations about around COVID and what it means to be Asian American in the United States right now. And it's very interesting to me because, you know, when people ask me, you know, where I'm from, I consider myself American, but to my parents, you know, they were born and raised in China. And so that question, you know, doesn't have the same layers to them as it does to me.
As you grow up, there were times when the U.S. and China were more, you know, friendly terms, and also times when the bilateral relationship is deteriorating, as what we have right now. Do you feel like the change or the increasing tension between the two countries is making the identity struggle of Chinese Americans more complicated?
Yes, I absolutely think it's making things more difficult, just because, you know, if you even look at recent years and with COVID and what was going on before with all the, you know, anti-Asian, you know, racism and the attacks, and I think it makes for a very scary time to be Chinese American here and to be, you know, Asian American, because it's, you know, a lot of hatred and fear and discrimination that previously existed but is now coming more to the surface, and now other people are more comfortable expressing that. And so it definitely is a big concern, I think, for me and many, many people of my generation and Chinese Americans.
I think there is another layer of identity struggle, that is to find who I am, what I want, mm-hmm. versus what my parents are expecting from me. Of course, this is a universal struggle faced by almost all the young adults. But particularly for the second generation of Chinese Americans, because they also carry the weight of being their parents' American dream. I feel like it also gives some incentives to your characters to take this adventure, right?
Yes, absolutely. That is something that I personally am constantly thinking about, just because, you know, my parents grew up in China and came here for their education. And growing up, I felt a lot of pressure that was, you know, never really spoken, and yet I still felt like they had come so far and achieved so much that I felt like I had to, you know, do the same. I had to be their American dream. And it's only now that I'm a little older and I'm having more conversations with them that I'm realizing that their hopes for me are really just my own happiness and my own fulfillment. And so I wanted my characters to also grapple with similar things, where, you know, they both feel that pressure but also have to come to terms with that and to realize that, you know, maybe so it'll be okay.
You know, conducting the heist for your characters is not only a rebellion but also a process of making peace with themselves, right?
Yes.
That's why Will Chen at the end, I don't want to spoil too much, but it seems like at the end he said this is first time he feel like satisfied with mm-hmm. life. Being a mad student at Stanford by day and a published writer by night can be an adventure for you. Have you discovered more of yourself by writing this book?
Yes, I definitely have. I originally, when I was writing this book, I didn't know what would come of it. I started writing it because I wanted to read a book like this where characters, where Chinese American characters could go on an adventure and pull off a heist and also, you know, think about their identity and make peace with what it means to be Chinese American. So I really wrote this book for me, and it means so much that I now get to share it with other people.
This novel is currently in development at Netflix as you're serving as an executive producer. How is it going?
It is going well. I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to reveal, but I will say that I'm very excited about the direction that the Netflix team is going in. And one of the reasons why I chose to go with Netflix was because they really had an emphasis on, you know, Asian American identity and voices, and making sure that the show would accurately reflect, you know, the themes and the issues in the book. So I'm very excited about what they're doing.
I read about, like, Netflix has put a lot of efforts recently in, you know, telling more Asian American stories. But overall, do you think the Asian Americans and the Chinese Americans particularly, their stories have still been underrepresented in American film industry?
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, the change that's happening right now is very welcome, but also long overdue. There are so many Asian American stories and Chinese American stories that are still waiting to be told. So I feel very lucky to be part of that in some small way, and I feel also very hopeful that we will get more of our stories down the line.
All right. Thank you very much, Grace.
好的，今天美国观察的全部内容就是这些，感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。